This is such a great conversation. You started off the conversation with, I fought hard against net neutrality. I said, oh, fight. This has happened right here live.
This episode is made possible by OIT VoIP. Find your best-in-class revenue generation for MSPs all over the world. Learn more via the link in the show notes.
Good morning and welcome to MSP Dispatch for April 30th of 2024.
No, wait, Tom, hold on. You're actually doing the very first ever MSP Dispatch live show that's going to be every Wednesday hosted by you at 12:30 Eastern. But for now, let's let Jason and Tony get back to the news.
Okay, see you then.
In today's story from TechCrunch.com, FCC officially votes to reinstate net neutrality. The Federal Communications Commission, that's FCC, voted to reinstate net neutrality, preventing broadband providers from manipulating internet traffic. This restores rules established during the Obama administration and reversed under Trump's presidency. Following a policy direction set in September, the decision wasn't unexpected given the commission's Democratic majority. Chairwoman Jessica Rosenworcel dismisses critics' arguments against net neutrality, saying they don't hold much weight, especially claims about stifling innovation. She highlights the FCC's existing authority to regulate other areas without overly burdensome rules. The move aims to address inconsistencies, like the FCC's failure to regulate broadband amid concerns about Chinese state-affiliated carriers. Despite potential legal challenges, the reinstatement signals a commitment to preserving an open internet. Jason, it's unfortunate that I'm having this conversation with you because you know absolutely nothing about the internet and the tubes and how the tubes move data. What are your thoughts on this? This is a very, very... There are so many people that have well-crafted responses and hardened opinions, but a lot of them aren't backed on factually, statistically relevant information. And frankly, understanding the genesis of how the internet started, how it evolved into where it is. What is your opinion on it with the day-to-day involvement that you have? Give us your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I fought hard against net neutrality, or towards it, I guess, when it first came out, right? Like, this is a thing that it means a lot to me because, again, the internet was built on it. The counterpoint to that is, well, you know, the free market will work it out and you can, you know, just go get a different provider that's not doing the slower fast lanes. But the reality of it is that much of the country still lives in essentially a near monopoly where you can only get one provider. And it wasn't actually a monopoly because a lot of those franchise agreements for the cable companies, which are the incumbents in almost every case, actually granted them in a monopoly in exchange for them running those initial cables. So, and you're just now seeing, like, in my neighborhood here, I think there's three fiber to the home providers currently digging. It's absolutely insane. So we are finally starting to see some choice, but I don't believe you should be able to pay as a source of TVs, right? The internet is TVs and eyeballs. We have eyeballs. TVs want our eyeballs. You shouldn't be able to, as TVs, be able to pay to have faster access and make all the other TVs suffer.
This is such a great conversation. You started off the conversation with, I fought hard against net neutrality. I said, oh, fight. This is
right here live.
Yeah. And I'm like, now this is now boring. We're on the same side. We're using logic and reason. And if we kind of apply that theory of, I know of no way of foretelling the future, but by the past, if you go back just a little bit to cellular, I used to be a telemetry engineer. There used to be A side and B side carriers. Now it's just all digital, CDMA, TDMA, time division multiple access, code division multiple access, which is a subset of GSM from Europe. You have the standards that were here were originally an A side carrier and a B side carrier. A B side cellular carrier was somebody who had an incumbent landline provider in that area. The problem is those landline providers like GTE MobileNet, who was GTE, the mobile side of this, had a GTE landline carrier. They decided they wanted a GTE MobileNet in another area where there were B everywhere else. Now they're an A, which made it very difficult to transition back and forth. Cellular One came out. They did not have a landline presence, which means they were always an A side carrier. that wasn't fair. It wasn't congruent. There's a lot of area swaps. So what they did is they chopped off a portion of the frequency that says, hey, let's move everyone to this new digital band. We'll eventually offset the analog, which was hilarious back then. And then we'll just expand as we've created that engineered obsolescence. The problem with that is by providing that subsidy to allow people to create the bid for these digital bands, think Sprint for a moment, you've locked them in to something. Now, to lock them into something because they're putting that investment and then later give them the option, do you want to regulate the thing that we allowed you to lock yourself in on? I don't believe that is fair. And I know that we're going off on a tangent here, but I think it's important that we correlate what used to happen to what is happening now and what could happen at a later time. I think there's a very, very clear future. So, Jason, why don't I stop babbling for a moment? Give us your closing thoughts on this amazing topic.
I mean, the other side of that is, right, all of these carriers want to benefit from the other side of being common carriers, right? They all don't want to get in trouble for the content exchanged over their networks because they follow the common carrier laws. The common carrier laws are somewhat built upon open access. So I don't think you can have your cake and eat it too there, honestly.
Yeah, absolutely incredible, incredible summary. And that really goes into the point of, at the end of the day, there are people making their own problems, possibly. There are some people that can foresee that. And then sometimes those problems are unforeseen. And with that, I think there's a notable mention you're going to cover right now on that.
Yep. And in my notable mention, over 1,400 crushed FTP servers vulnerable to actively exploited bug. This one's brought to us by Sergio Gatlin from Bleeping Computer. Over 1,400 crushed FTP servers online are vulnerable to an actively exploited bug, including a critical server-side template injection vulnerability, which is CVE-2024-4040. Initially described as a VFS sandbox escape, remote code execution on unpatched systems can be achieved by unauthorized attackers. Rapid7 confirmed the flaw's severity, highlighting its unauthenticated and easily exploitable nature. The most vulnerable instances are in the US, Germany, and Canada. CrowdStrike reports targeted attacks on crushed FTP servers in the US, potentially politically motivated. User should promptly apply patches and monitor the vendor's updates to safeguard against ongoing exploitation. CISA has also included CVE-2024-4040 in its known exploited vulnerabilities catalog, mandating action from U.S. federal agencies by May 1st to secure their servers.
If you found this episode eye-opening, catch more MSP Dispatch at 10 a.m. throughout the week. Share your thoughts below, and don't forget to like and subscribe.
This has been a broadcast of the MSP Media Network.